We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Thanks for listening to Dusty and Cam podcast, brought to you on the fan by your local Les Schwab Tire Center. Doing the right thing since 1952.
It's Football Friday on the Fan.
It's a man's game now.
This is a Football Friday edition of Dusty and Cam in the Morning with Dusty Hera and former All-American Cam Cleland.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app. Download the app, make the fan your favorite station, and enable push notifications for the latest on the Ducks, Beavers, Blazers, and your favorite shows.
Football Friday with Dusty and Cam on 1080.
We have great expectations.
The Fan.
All right, coming up on Sunday, a quick programming note to all you folks out there that are getting ready for your NFL viewing, listening experience. Coming up on The Fan, it is no longer a 1 o'clock kick between the Seahawks and the Cardinals on Sunday. The NFL has moved Seahawks-Cardinals to 5:30. Sunday Night Football right here on The Fan. Will be Seahawks and Cards because of the COVIDs happening with the Raiders organization.
Yeah, but good news, Adam Schefter, no more positive tests this morning for the Raiders and Broncos, so games remain on track. That is per Mr.
Wait,
Chef.
What's up with the Broncos?
Because the Raiders were playing the Broncos.
Oh,
so
last
they didn't
week?
Have any, yeah, they didn't.
Is that who they played?
Yeah. So they're like, you know, contact tracing.
Right. So if you don't know, Trent Brown is a tackle for the Raiders. He has the COVIDs. And so as part of their contact tracing, they couldn't figure out who he'd been in contact with because Trent Brown is not wearing, apparently, his little tracking device that all the NFL players were given to wear around the facility.
At the facility only.
Yeah. And you're supposed to put it on when you're there. So any person that you come in contact with while you're there, they know who they need to quarantine. Well, because he didn't do that, they said the Raiders and the NFL were like, well, I guess we have to put our entire offensive line into quarantine.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the other four starters and then Jonathan Abram, who I guess is their starting safety, I guess they're bros, he and Trent Brown, he had to be put in the quarantine too.
Yeah.
So they're waiting for all the tests.
No new tests, though. That's good. No new positives.
Here's the latest on that, though. No new positives out of that. And I guess you have to go through 5 days, right, of the no contact.
Unless you're Nick Saban.
And they go back to Monday. So they go back to Monday for this. Yeah. And so they could be out of it by the end of today. So as of tomorrow, we could have all of the Raiders linemen back. Sure. And they could have 4/5 of their offensive line.
It's all good news. It's good news for the Raiders. Good news for Raiders fans. Certainly, man. Can you imagine going into a game and have all your starting offensive line gone?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing.
Whoa.
Well, wait. Yes, I can. The Dallas Cowboys are going through that right now.
That's right. Because Zach Martin is done too. That's right.
The Philadelphia Eagles are almost there.
Right.
With what they're going through because they only have Jason Kelce. This is a weird time. Right. I mean, this would be another team just absolutely decimated on the O-line. But
it's the coach's fault. My bad, right? Cowboys fans, it's the coach's fault. They're the problem. Pathetic players calling out their coaches. That's so Bush League.
But if it is the defensive players that are doing it, I mean, they have injuries on defense, but it's not that.
Doesn't matter. You don't do that. That's
so
Bush League.
But no, I was just talking
about. That's so millennial to do that crap.
Talking about the coaches not.
It's crap.
Not being good.
It's crap.
Yeah, well, I don't disagree with that. It is crap.
You don't do that. You have the balls to go step up to your coaches, walk up to their offense. office. Have a communication with that. Look a man in the eye. Tell them what your problem is. Don't go peddly bitch into HR and your cute little reporters that you're whining to. Have the balls to look at somebody in the eye.
Is the media HR now?
Well, that's what the media is. The media is HR. That's what you're doing. You're using your HR. You're like, anonymously going to tell you something, but it didn't come from me. That's pathetic. That's pathetic. I can't wait till Coach McCarthy can weed out all the bad apples in there, too.
So. Yeah. So the Raiders, it looks like they're on track to play, but apparently there's reports, and this was my question about, you know, the NFL bent over backwards for the Tennessee Titans and for the New England Patriots to adjust schedules and move everything around. It seems like they reached the point where they're just like, well, sorry, Raiders. You know, like, not much we're going to be able to do for you here.
Yeah.
Because there was no talk of, hey, we're going to change the schedule or anything like that. And we're sitting here on Friday. It's Friday right now. And it was like when these things were happening in the past, it was, nope, okay, we'll move the game to Monday. We'll move the game to Tuesday. We're going to do this, this, and this. The NFL kind of backed themselves in a corner and said, we can't do this for every single team. And there's no way we're going to be able to do it. And the Raiders, they already got a big fine for John Gruden's mask. And apparently there's guys not wearing masks around the facility right now.
Shocking.
And the Raiders, the NFL's like, well, hey, if you guys aren't going to play ball with us, then, you know, Trent Brown, if you're not going to wear your tracking device, well, then we're not going to do anything for you.
Right.
So
I don't know what else that the NFL is going to try to do, because they need their teams to follow the protocols. But they can't. I mean, if they're going to put a thumbprint on all of this, eventually the only thing you can do to the point where it's going to get across to the players is make a game forfeit and lose game checks. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if that would ever happen, because there is no way in God's green earth that the Player Association would allow that to happen, because this is a negotiation between the two, and they sat down and had those negotiations. However, I don't know where the trump card is in the NFL and what they have and whether their legal team is willing to go to down that line, because if you do go down that line, you're talking grievances upon grievances, lawsuits upon lawsuits by players, teams, and organization, and the NFL doesn't want to do that. They want to work in a partnership. So, with all that being said, Raiders, quit being a bunch of punks. Get it right.
Yeah, instead of moving the game back, they said, we're going to move it 4 hours earlier.
Yeah.
They moved it to 1:00. Game's still on for Sunday. Bucks at Raiders. But they moved it from Sunday night football to Sunday day football, because the NFL said, we're not going to cover your butts. We're going to cover our butts. We're going to make sure that window of primetime football is a good game. And I think it's a big tip in the cap to the matchup that the Seahawks and Cardinals have. I said earlier in the week, I think this is a great matchup between the two. It's NFC West. You've got an unbeaten team. You've got a hot young team in the Cardinals, and they could have put, you know, 49ers Patriots in that window, because that's an afternoon game. They could have flexed up, you know, one of the other morning games like the Steelers and Titans, which is two undefeated teams, but they said, no, what we're going to do, we're going to put the Cardinals and the Seahawks in that game, move it up like 4 hours, and boom. I think that's a big tip of the cap to what Seattle and Arizona are both doing, because the NFL wants that as prime time.
I think it's also, too, it shows that it's a West Coast game. It's more convenient time-wise. It makes more sense for the NFL to do it. But, yeah, you have Kyler Murray and Russell Wilson, two electric young quarterbacks. I mean, Russ isn't young, but he's in the prime. And you got two teams that are vying for not control of their division. You could look at the division games are big. You know, that's what everybody's looking forward to, is these in-division matchups that we can sit there and start to see how is this going to work out. Last night we got a great divisional. As much as you want to say division games always mean more, and usually they're closer because there's so much familiarity between the two. And we do know Seattle plays very well down in Arizona, not so much when Arizona comes up north, which is bizarre to me.
They flip-flop those.
But we should get a battle tonight. I think we're going to see, or I'm sorry, Sunday night, and that's good. And we also get to see Chris Collinsworth and Al Michaels enjoy a nice Sunday night in a beautiful desert.
Yeah.
With no masks on.
Wait, what?
They don't have to call a game with masks on, so I hear them muffled.
Wait, why not? I thought that was an NBC thing.
No, it's a county thing.
Oh. Really?
Yes.
That's what it is?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, I thought that was an NBC thing that they had to call the games with masks on, because NBC was like, hey, wear your damn mask.
No, it's a county.
Oh. Well, you'll have that game on, and that'll be Sunday Night Football. And we're going to, maybe the Seahawks catch a break, but also the Arizona Cardinals may be catching a break too. As
extra healing time?
Jamal Adams, he's still not practicing. And so that may be a break for the Cardinals if he can't go. I thought he was going to be good to go coming out of the bye week, you know, with that lingering groin injury. That leads you to believe that there may be a little bit more, huh?
Or
he said he feels good, not great.
Yeah, if he's going to come back, he's going to want to come back and feel as close to 100%, and there's no such thing as 100%, but as close to 100% as possible. And if they're going to give it an extra week and they can make it through, what it does show you is that they're not desperate enough to come back and worry about this game, which they should. Can't take that for granted. You can take any division games for granted. But I think knowing that they're going to need him for the push of November and December, which mm-hmm. is the critical games, a lot of division, multiple division matchups coming up. San Francisco's coming up. The Rams are coming up. They want to make sure he's healthy for that. Don't come back and have a set. Because if you come back early, have a setback, then you're really just like, oh, crap.
On the flip side of it, you had the Arizona Cardinals, DeAndre Hopkins. He has an ankle injury that is sidelining him. Mm-hmm. That one, okay, we've talked about this before, but he's missed the last couple of days of practice with an ankle injury. This is a short week.
Yeah.
In the NFL, short week, you're leaning into a big game. It's common for guys stars not to practice in this time, right?
He's healthy. Well, he's as healthy as a guy is in week 7 as you could look. He's a great playmaker. Short week. That's an advantage for the Seahawks. Off a bye. Short week, big win. Although the win wasn't very difficult for Arizona. Kyler Murray only had 9 completions?
Yeah.
What? So it's not like they were beat down.
Is that good?
Yeah, well, no, it's good if you're looking in percentages. It's not great if you're looking at numbers. If you win, that's all that matters.
Especially in an air raid offense. When's the last time style of play like that got you 9 completions and you win the ball game?
Oof. But yeah, it's pretty typical for veterans that have had a little injuries. You take a day out. What does D-Hop need to get a practice in? It's more important for him to get healthy as best you can. Take some time off. Take some miles off the tires heading into Sunday's night game.
I'm excited for this game. You got good on good here. You're going to have two offenses that are going to be on fire. The over-under is set at 56. That's a big number.
Well, Seahawks lead the league right now in scoring average at 34 points per game. I think that you're going to get a pretty good score.
It's the second highest over-under of the weekend, only second to the Packers-Texans game, which is at 57.
What, Darren Urban yesterday, we had him on the show yesterday. He was mentioning that without Chandler Jones, they just don't have the pass rush.
No.
And so what are you going to have to do? You saw it versus Dallas. What did the Cardinals do so well? They brought Buda Baker down in the box, and they had to bring pressure to get to Andy Dalton, and because they didn't have the pass. It's the same situation the Seahawks were using Jamal Adams, taking the page out of, we don't have a great inline pass rusher with 4. We better bring our most versatile player, is why they brought Buda down, and he made sure he made those plays, just like Jamal Adams was prior to his injury for the Seahawks. So I would expect to see a lot of Buda Baker.
You know what the sneaky signing was for the Seattle Seahawks?
Sneaky?
Yeah. Sneaky signing.
Sneaky signing.
Jonathan Bullard. Remember, they signed him off of Arizona's practice squad as a pass rusher.
Give me the playbook.
And then the next week, Chandler Jones ruptures his bicep. And so they need a guy who can rush pass. Now he's a defensive end, not a weak side linebacker in that 3-4. Mm-hmm. But they need pass rush help. And that guy's sitting on the Seahawks roster now.
Right.
With the playbook.
Brought the playbook with him. Got the digital code. They hacked into the iPad, made sure they could get it. Because they're on iPads now.
Yeah, that was a sneaky signing, though. Because, I mean, he's a guy that, you know, the Cardinals had him on the practice squad. Mm-hmm. Because, hey, if something happens to one of our pass rushers, we can bring him in.
So what's cool about the practice squad is that you're not protected unless you have a specific, and they're always going to elevate you, and they're going to tell you you're going to elevate. That's why Kendricks was put on the practice squad first. Wilkinson? Why did I say that? Snacks?
Harrison.
I always say Wilkinson. Damian. Snacks. Mm. Harrison. Lillard. He was put on also the practice squad. Not everybody expects veterans to be put on practice squads, but it's more of a storage.
He's just getting he's getting ramped up to play.
Yeah, I was hearing Brady Henderson on with Dirt and Sprague yesterday basically saying that because Snacks hadn't been playing to this point in the season, his body's just not quite ready.
Not ready.
350 pounds. He's got to get a few more practices.
they got to trim that down. All those old terms that you used to think were demeaning, like IR, it's done for the year, practice squad, they mean completely different.
I like it. I think the NFL should keep it.
I think they are.
I think they should. I think this should be a long-term fix. All right, sometimes we go to great lengths to justify glaring flaws in something if it directly benefits us. We'll ignore it. That's exactly what Russell Wilson is doing. We'll talk about it next. Dustin Cam on the Fan. All right, sometimes we go to great lengths to justify glaring flaws because it'll directly benefit us. You know, we all go through this. You use this rationalization and you go, you know what? I can overlook that if this is going to help me. And I think that might be what we're seeing with Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks, because he was asked directly yesterday about bringing in one Antonio Brown to the Seahawks roster.
I think Antonio definitely has taken those steps in the process. And like I said, nobody's perfect. You know, from the conversations I've had with him, he's really been remorseful and just, he's been humbled, you know, along the way. You know, I really, you know, and like I said, I pray that, you know, he can continue to grow just like anybody, you know, and, you know, all the stuff I'm not into that, you know what I mean, in terms of knowing, you know, I wasn't there or anything, that process, you know, that part of it, but knowing, you know, what I know of him and the times I've been around him, and that, you know, I try not to judge people.
And that's a good, the way he ends it is very good. Mm-hmm. Right? I think we all should live by that, right? I try not to judge people. But yeah.
I laugh at that because it's we're all human.
That's why I said we should all try to.
Absolutely, try best you can. Try as best you can, but unfortunately, we're human beings.
But let me go ahead and say this. Mm-hmm. You know, Russell Wilson says, you know, I'm going to stay away from all the things that are glaring and right in front of our faces as to why we shouldn't sign him. Albeit the legal issues that he's going through, yeah. Or the fact that his time in Pittsburgh ended in disaster, his time in Oakland ended in disaster, and the time in New England ended in disaster.
Yeah.
You know, it's the, you know what? I can overlook those because he's really good.
Sure.
And he can help me and my team out mm-hmm. a lot.
Yeah. You got to go with benefits, what's best, because the first thing in football, especially with the NFL, is win first. Win first. Character can be subjective based on how you look at it. The little history of Russ and why I respect Russell Wilson so much. Not everybody appreciates him. Some people don't like him. Some think he's fake. Some think he's that. That's up to your opinion and how it does. But history on Russell Wilson is he'll tell you, and he's shared this before, so if this isn't news for you, if this is new for you, then maybe you'll be like, oh, Russell Wilson, when he was in younger years, when his father was around, he was accused of being a big-time bully when he was growing up. He said massive negative things to kids. He got in trouble at school in fights, and he was considered a bully. And his dad sat him down, had him changed, took him to therapy, took all the things, and he finally said, you can't treat people this way. This isn't going to be successful. He had a turnaround in college. He stepped into Wisconsin, and he now has one of the, I consider something, if I wish I would have done this. It's one of those things where you wish you know now, is a mental coach, a positive mental coach to teach you how to take a positive mindset and constantly convince, because the brain in your mind is very powerful. So he's found a way to do that. And the identity of the Seahawks is they're never out. So you can see the identity of how the Seahawks always believe. You may think it's corny. Some people think it's fake, but it's working. So call it what you want. It's certainly easier to be negative, bitch, whine, complain, poke fingers and say that, but it's working. The deserve thing is where I disagree with Russ. Is that nobody deserves anything.
Yeah, he said he deserves another chance.
I can't disagree with that. I don't disagree with him very often, but I can't disagree with him anymore because you don't deserve jack squat. You earn it. Mm-hmm. You earn it. Now, if he's put in some time, if he does feel, I'm not having conversations with Antonio Brown, Russell Wilson is.
You're
so
not?
No. So if Russ is saying that, I'm going to trust that side first, because the downside or the upside is he comes back, he's got a great attitude, fits into the locker room, and they go on and win football games, helps out the Seahawks. The downside is he causes a problems issue, cut him, it's gone, tweak, see you later, mm-hmm. Get out of here, we don't really need you. That's the thing, is there is no downside to it, because it's not going to affect it that much. You're not giving guy $100 million. Isn't Percy Harvin getting in a fight right before the Super Bowl and then going out and running a kickoff back because he beat Denver by 70,000 points? This is a no-lose situation for everybody here. But the deserve thing, that's a culture kind of thing. I don't like that. But I don't like deserve anything. You got to put your time in. You know, people put their time in. You sat as a producer for 6 years. Mm-hmm. Okay, I busted my ass and hit my head up against the wall. I'm sitting in this chair because I have a football experience, not because I sat in a chair for 16 years or anything. You're here for a reason. You put your time in, and then you earn your spot. This I deserve crap is killing me.
But that's a very good point. And the one thing is that, you know, if they do bring in Antonio Brown, you know, the Percy Harvin thing is an interesting one. Because they overlooked a lot of his flaws too, right? And it mm-hmm. It did affect them at one point though, because eventually it could be fine up until a point where he goes back over the edge. And shouldn't that be the fear of coming, like the negative side of this is, sure, it could be going well, but then in an important time, a la Percy Harvin, it all falls apart because there's been a history of that with Antonio Brown.
All I know is what I see in front of me.
Yeah.
Is that I'm going to trust Russ and what he's doing. And along with Pete Carroll, and their system has worked. They've only missed the playoffs one time in his tenure, Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll, okay, together. And that was the year where Russ was 86% of the offense. He didn't have any lead the team in rushing, passing, everything. So he didn't have any help. They got rid of Daryl Bevel. Things have changed. I'm just going to put that kind of trust in there. If I was running the organization, maybe I'd run it differently. But this is their decision to make a run. And first of all, everybody that tries to get this character thing, and character is important. I get it, folks. I get it. Character is important. But you know what's more important in a performance-based business? Winning. Nobody talks about the character of a team if they're 3-13. Look at the character. No, you don't. You don't do it. It is not helping my fantasy team. Well, their character is so great. Now look at the character of the Cincinnati Bengals. There you go. Great character. They suck. Cleveland Browns. Go. What? Win. Yeah. Win first. Win second. Good coaching. Positive attitudes. Win.
And there have been, I mean,
let's, pro football. This isn't a sociological study of sixth graders.
The interesting part about the Seahawks is like culture and character is.
It's the Jailblazers.
But hold on. It's at the forefront of the Seahawks, like because of who their leader is with Russell Wilson, right?
Of course.
And it's like, oh, high character. Remember, they've taken some real big risks on character.
Absolutely.
Be it guys like Bruce Irvin and the mm-hmm. red flags he had, mm-hmm. or Frank Clark,
right.
And the criticisms that came under with Frank Clark bringing him in.
Disgruntled guys all over the place.
It's not like that. This is anything new where they're bringing in guys that you go, mm-hmm. you know, this could be bad. And some of them have worked out well for them. I mean, Bruce Irvin did work out well for them.
Do you think it's,
when he was there?
Dusty, do you think it's really hard for people that are on the outside sitting on their couch or listening to the show? Or the one thing I always try to describe is you have to be able to play in the NFL at the highest level. You're a one percenter with one aspect that not everybody can understand. You're bat-ass crazy. And you have to have an edge to the point where not everybody knows how to separate the violence, the aggression, and all of that as a former player and what it goes through to get you to success. Sometimes, folks, I know we're fallible. Yeah. This is part of being a human. As I try to tell you, you have to be crazy, violent, psychopath sometimes out there.
Well, and I think
not all of us are kickers and punters. We're crazy. I'm crazy. I can tell you that. I have a little bit of crazy in me. I went to a dark place when I crossed that point where you wouldn't want to be. That's how you have to get to that point. It's not an excuse, but sometimes it helps you understand character flaws to be able to get through that game, get overlooked before winning.
And some are small, some are large. And I think with Antonio Brown, his are large. And
they are.
I think most guys in the NFL, I think we hear about what we hear about them is either at their best moments or at their worst moments, right? We don't really hear much about what happens in the middle, right? And that can be a lot of how people are judged and how we see them, right? We've heard a lot of bad about Antonio Brown, But I think a lot of the risks that the Seahawks have taken in the past is they've done the homework on what happens in the middle. And this one seems like a bigger risk than the others that they've made with some of the other guys mm-hmm. that have had the quote-unquote red flags mm-hmm. around them.
Can you play or can you not play? First criteria. Second, can you help us win? Third, are you a good locker room guy or are you a bad locker room guy? Can we help you mold you into somebody? Can you come into our culture and I can change that mindset? If I feel strong about my culture, like Damian Lillard, mm-hmm. I can take anybody that comes in here and I can get them on board. That's leadership. They have it in Seattle. And I wish them luck with Antonio Brown if it works out.
The NFC least was on full display last night. How low can it go? Here's back with SportsCenter. How low can the NFC East go? That is a question that we are wondering after watching last night's Thursday night football game, where the Eagles beat the Giants 22-21. Great drive by Carson Wentz to end the game. Phenomenal drive to end the game. But before that, it was just kind of like sloppy slap of football.
Well, two drives. What about the throw he made that was like a 50-yard bomb dropping right over the top?
That's pretty good.
Beautiful throw. Was it Fulgham that caught that? Or Hightower? It's Hightower. Hightower caught that ball. 59-yard.
How about Fulgham, though?
Yeah.
Coming off practice squad.
How about the tight end? Huh? Richard Rodgers. He had a great game. By the way, we're number 85. Tell you what, you wear 85, you're automatically a top tight end. That's how it works. If you don't wear 85, I don't know what else to tell you.
Well, wear number 88 because Evan Ingram.
Segue into Evan Ingram.
My goodness.
Put an 85 jersey on. You'll be fine, Tyreek Jones. Wasn't he wearing 85 with the helmet catch?
Oh, David Tyree.
Tyree, wasn't he wearing number 85? Correct me if I'm wrong, 85?
I don't remember what number Tyree was.
I think he was 85.
I don't know.
He's not a tight end. I swear to God he was 85.
He's number 85. Yeah, I would trust you on that one. Evan Ingram could have iced that game.
Yeah.
Daniel Jones on third down and six.
That's a good throw.
Great throw.
That's a good
throw. Put it only where his guy could get it. Hit him right in the hands, over the shoulder. Ingram, I mean, you got to catch that football.
Yeah, you do.
If he does, they ice that game because they only scored with what? 34 seconds left,
yep.
Was it?
Yep.
And you would have been able to run enough time off the clock, at least flip the field if you had to punt again, and you know, mm-hmm. boom, mm-hmm. game over for the New York Giants. As it is, Wentz leads them down the field and they win. But that leads us to the NFC least, where now at 1-2, 4-1, the Eagles are in charge of that division.
Yeah.
Are we going to see a 6-win team win the NFC East?
Well, what it's going to mean is that a team, and this is kind of the deserved thing or why divisions are still important. I think divisions are still valuable, but they're always going to be valuable in the NFL because it gives the kind of the two matchups during the season. You got to play each other twice. I still love that. It's just, it's a need. However, maybe there is a criteria that the NFL looks into in the future of you got to be at least 500 to be able to host a playoff game if you're a division winner. I know if it's 7-9, we saw Seattle do it and beat the New Orleans Saints. We know it's the Beast Quake. Mm-hmm. It's a very famous football game, a legendary football game. Although the Seahawks had already lost to the Saints in the regular season, so it was a rematch. But the Saints are coming off a Super Bowl and they're going, we got to travel to Seattle, who's 7-9, who won the crappy NFC West. Well, that's going to happen again because Seattle traveled to play Carson Wentz last year.
Mm-hmm.
Were they 8-8 last year as a division winner? Or were they 7-9 last year? They beat the Cowboys in the last game of the season to win the division. I think they were 8-8.
I don't think they were I don't think a 7-9 team was in the playoffs so last year.
But we could see that this year, a 6-10 or a 6-9-1.
Well,
that's not possible. 5-9-1.
ESPN's Football Power Index.
5-9-1 win the division.
They did 20,000 simulations of the season. And the most probable one that came up was a 28% chance of the NFC East winner having 6 or fewer wins.
Yep.
It even found 13 out of their 20,000 simulations had the division champ emerging with 4 wins.
Scary.
If you look at their Football Power Index, of the entire league as a whole, the worst team in the league is the Jets. The second worst team is the Jaguars. Okay. So there's 32-31. 30th is the Giants. 29th is the Cowboys. 28th is the Washington football team. So 3/4 of that division are of the 5 worst teams in the league. And then if you go up just a few spots more at 22nd is the Philadelphia Eagles. The 22nd best team in the league is the Philadelphia Eagles, and they kind of control the league right now. And if you look at if we're going to be realistic with it, 7-9 will probably win the division, right? I mean, six-win team would be very tough to do.
It'd be very tough to do, but I think let's all hope that there's a get-right feel for Philly because they could get healthy with some of their guys coming back.
Sure.
We've seen it before.
That
also means that a team in the NFC that's going to have a way above 500 could be 9-7, 10-6, and not make the playoffs. That, to me, is a travesty.
In the NFC West,
we could see
a very good team.
Three teams aren't going to get in from the NFC West.
No, and I think if you were to look at the NFC West, all four of the teams in the NFC West, would you take them over the best team in the NFC East?
As we sit right now, absolutely.
Every single
team. Who wouldn't?
Every single team.
You'd rather have the 49ers in than the Philadelphia Eagles or Dallas? Of course you, yeah.
Okay, go to the next division, the NFC. Now, this one's a little tougher.
Yeah, no.
The NFC South.
Well, three there. Well, in two.
Well,
two. I don't know if I'm in on Carolina. Carolina's too fluctuating. I mean, it's fluctuating in and out. That's a tough one. They're on the verge, but they're 3-3.
You ain't taking Atlanta.
If Christian McCaffrey comes back healthy, yes, I'd rather take Carolina. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
It's a tough thing where you look at all of these divisions in football, like it's down to, is the last team in the division better than the best team in the NFC East across the entire NFC, the Minnesota Vikings, the Atlanta Falcons? You're sitting there and you have those questions about could they beat the Eagles or the Cowboys or the Giants or the Washington football team? Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a bad division right now and it's not getting any better. Cause last night, you know, DeSean Jackson got hurt too on that punt.
Yeah.
Did you think okay. I saw a late hit. You know, a lot of he got injured on a late hit there.
Right.
It was kind of bang bang. Did you think it was as egregious as,
thought? I didn't think it was egregious because he didn't go down from the first hit. So he wanted to try to start running again. So I could understand what the guy was doing. He was trying to tackle him because his knee wasn't down on the first initial targeting penalty, which was I think that was what the personal foul was the targeting with the helmet. But he wasn't down then yet.
Yeah. That's a tough injury, though, to sit there and look at. And it you does. Go, just another one on a
if,
long
If that's
list.
As ugly as it gets and it's a torn, I think he's done. I think he shuts it down.
If it is torn, torn
is he,
ACL.
What, is he 34? Is he 33, 34?
They say that, according to Adam Schefter, 1 hour ago, they believe it's just a high ankle sprain. So he's going to get an MRI on it today. But it looked like a knee injury.
Yeah,
that's last
better
night.
Than a knee.
This morning, the update is actually very optimistic on DeSean Jackson.
And that's good news.
Look, if they're going to make it, if the Eagles are going to make any sort of run in this,
they can't get healthy.
It's gonna have to be getting healthy by all of their skill position guys, and maybe hopefully getting guys like Lane Johnson back. And you may have to shut him down.
Well,
for
the good
a
thing
while.
About the NFL is they're willing to shift and adjust. They're not in Major League Baseball is coming around, so good for Rob Manfred allowing more baseball in. I think that's great. The NBA adjusts, they shift and change. We know the NFL is the best at it. They love to shift and adjust and change their tone. If we do get a 6-win team this year, I bet the conversation comes up. You got to have a minimum 7 wins, or if they even put, I think 7's a fair amount. I would rather see a 500 record, but you'd never know with injuries and how the division shakes out. Mm-hmm. I think 7 should be bare minimum. If you get 6-win division, oh gosh.
28% chance, according to Football Power
Index.
If 6-9
and one team gets in,
6 or fewer wins. You'll get a 7-win team out of there. I'm sure, because they all start playing each other.
Yeah.
Somebody will rise to the top in this, and hopefully we get a good team. Because last year it looked bad, and 9-7 was the official record of the Philadelphia Eagles, who won the NFC East last year. 9-7. All right, hey, shots fired again. Is this something in the water up in Pullman? Dusty and Cam on the Fan. Hey, stick around. About 13 minutes from now, we'll be talking with Radio.com Sports NFL Insider Brian Baldinger. He will join the show. Talk everything NFL. Baldy's breakdowns are great. 13 minutes from now. What'd you think of Nick Rolovich's shots fired last night on social media, buddy?
Right on brand.
He called...
Right on brand, Cougs.
He called Husky Stadium, a garbage, a trash can? A dump?
Well. Well. So here's how this starts. So Coach Rolovich, brand new, hasn't even coached a game yet. Nothing. Haven't even coached a game yet. Comes from Hawaii. Wears a
bucket hat.
That's
a bucket hat.
Bucket hat guy. Bucket hat guy.
Well, he does like the practice coaching in a bucket hat, but he also does kind of like the not in cowboy hat, but like the brimmed, the brimmed like outdoorsman hat also.
So he's sitting in his office out at Pullman and takes a shot, takes a picture of Martin Stadium, by the way, named after a Husky, by the way. Funny. Anyway.
Wait, Martin Stadium is?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, go back in history. It's kind of funny. Anywho, takes a shot. It's got a nice little sunrise coming up over the Palouse. It's a nice shot. It's a good-looking shot. It's pretty. Mm-hmm. It's Martin Stadium.
Yeah.
It's nice. I mean, it's good. It's good. So a random dog fan. Dog at dog 784823 trailing off 71 pi squared. Some guy with a long, stupid head. Almost said a bad word. Anyway, he's a Husky fan. So he tweets back at Coach Rolovich. Says, nice high school stadium. Little shots fired.
Yeah, first
back
shot
at
fired. Shot there.
Fired. You mean you're
first
head,
shot fired.
You're
there.
A head football coach at a Division I program in the Pac-12. You make a couple million dollars. You're there to lead the Cougs.
Yeah.
Who cares about some little troll? Some little dogs 7897123 4 5 at me. He fires back. Come on, Coach Rolovich, reading the mentions, reading the Twitter. I'm just here for the comments. He says, "Isn't your stadium built on an old garbage dump?" And I went, look at this guy. This guy takes the time to read the trolls. He's taking the time to read the trolls. So I ask, so I said, I said, this guy's, funny. He's on brand. Isn't he on brand? Because let me ask you, is there ever been a Coug coach in the last 20 years that hasn't been so obsessed with hating the Huskies to the fact that he will troll and, what was Paul Wolf's first comment out of his mouth when he's introduced as the Huskies, or I'm sorry, as the Cougs head football coach? I hate purple. That was the first thing out of his mouth. First thing out of his mouth. Mm-hmm. I hate purple. We know Mike Leach spent a lot of time worrying about what the naysayers said. Back and forth. All that stuff. And now here we go. Nick Rolovich on brand. So I ask this from any other perspective. Is there any other program out there in the Pac-12 right now that is as on brand as Nick Rolovich?
No.
Because you would never, Mario Cristobal would never do that. Jimmy Lake has not done that as of yet. Chris Peterson prior to the time, no. Jonathan Smith, not doing that. Justin Wilcox isn't doing that. Spending time on Twitter, worrying about all the other stuff. What are you doing?
I think, okay,
doing?
First, I think it's funny because
it is funny.
He just came
funny.
In. And
it's pretty funny.
This is the other question, though. Is he wrong?
Well, the actual stadium is not built on the garbage landfill. Montlake area where the parking lot is, it was called Garbage Bay. But yes, it was a landfill for years. But where the stadium is, they had to do all the seismic tests. I learned about this because Stan Chernikoff was my geology teacher. Best, love Jocks for Rocks. It was awesome. I'm sorry, Rocks for Jocks. Let me get that right. My bad. Stan was one of my favorite professors at UW. So he taught us about the situation, about how far they had to drill and all the things that they had to make sure they find the right area to be able to put the stadium. So technically, he's wrong. But the area was called Garbage Bay because it was originally a Garbage Bay area. So,
So, I mean, he's kind of right.
So technically, you know what? Shut
up. I will say is that is actually a solid dig from the coach. Because
it is a solid dig.
It was,
great dig.
It was built,
but
I guess,
a little
near
immature.
A dump.
It's a little immature.
Well, sure, but I think he's just having fun with it. And you know what? I think that is great for the Pac-12 because we historically, the coaches taking shots at their other rivals is historically what it's all about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bo Schembechler and Woody Hayes. Taking shots
at their
rival.
Saban or Urban Meyer spend time on Twitter tweeting back at
at no.
But you know what?
But a Coug coach would, you know, and that's what? On brand.
Washington State isn't Alabama or Florida, but Michigan and Ohio State's coaches have. Jim Harbaugh's done it at Michigan. Still, he's gotten his ass kicked by Ohio State every time they play.
He goes after Twitter people?
He'll take shots publicly Ohio State,
sure,
which I think is great. Yeah. Steve Spurrier, when he was at Florida.
Now ball coach.
When he was at Florida, when he was at South Carolina, he had the best quotes ever when he'd played Georgia. He said, you know, best play part about playing Georgia early in the year is that all their good players are suspended at the beginning of the season.
Sure.
Like, those things are great in college football. And if that's going to be the Cougs brand, which you just outlined, the last three head coaches have all done it. I'm all for it. I think it's good for the Pac-12.
Being on brand is fantastic. I say, if you don't try to sell me something that you're not true to your core. And Coach Rolovich is that way, and I like that about him. Right. I do. Now, am I ecstatic that he's spending time wasting talking to trolls? Not really. Mm-hmm. But if you want to be on brand, Busch Light, talk to your trolls. And mix in some Fireball and go win some football games.
You know what?
If it works, it works.
You know what? Question's got to be asked. Is Washington getting a little sensitive about this? Is this a sensitive topic for Washington fans that the stadium was built on a dump?
We are elite.
It is a damn beautiful stadium now, though.
We are elite. We're a top five stadium in the country, and it's not even close.
You know what you guys should take pride in?
It's the best stadium in the conference, and it's not close.
You turned a garbage dump.
Whatever you guys want to say, it's not close.
You guys should take pride in the fact that you turned a garbage dump into the most scenic setting in college football.
Yeah. Nobody else is taking boats to the game, and it's not happening.
Not Tennessee
City
fans.
City of San Francisco built on garbage.
Yeah. Did they really?
Yeah.
Most of Seattle.
That's why it's like, you know, the hills are so steep. I mean, they just put it on top of a big old pile of garbage.
Mm-hmm. The erector set on garbage. Sounds like they could tear it down and just add to the pile.
Seattle, a lot of the freeway system is built on fill.
It's garbage.
Too.
Yeah, it's so bad. So bad.
Which, when the big one comes, that city's in.
Well, it's not like Portland's any better with all their bridges.
Well, no, not the bridges. I'm just talking about the ground will liquefy when the big one comes up there. It's not going to be good.
Love geology.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. It's an ugly situation to be in. All right. Hey.
Go Cougs, right? Hey. Tip of the cap to you. Hey, beat the Huskies because you haven't been able to do it in 7 years. So figure it out.
There we go. And rivalry officially back on. Rivalry's back on. We're back on. Rivalry back on.
Yeah.
Cougs, Huskies.
Let's go.
And guess what? We get football starting in 2 weeks from tomorrow. Yeah, 2 weeks from tomorrow.
Yeah.
Football starts the big noon kickoff. Between Arizona State and USC. Okay, coming up next hour, we have our weekend Would You Rather. That's being moved to 8:15 because we got to talk some football. Radio.com sports NFL insider and NFL network analyst Brian Baldinger joins us next. This is Dusty and Cam on 1080 The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.